Welcome to the Real Estate Success and Support Podcast, your resource for real estate strategies, tips, and best practices to take your business to the next level. There's no reason you can't double your sales. So let's get to it with your host, Kristen Brindley.
Hello, Real Producers. This is Kristen Brindley, and I'm here with the wonderful Karen Rawlings. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're our cover story for October. So DC Metro cover story and page 56 for the October issue. So make sure you check that out if you haven't yet. And, you know, Karen is someone who I think of as an entrepreneur and down to earth, says, you know, 100 houses, always the goal. And that's what she does on a regular basis, about $50 million in volume. That's a lot of, house volume right there, just saying. And I mean, you were number one for 7 years for Berkshire Hathaway, 10 years for Remax in your office there too. And now you're at eXp. And I love how you talk about it because you enjoy really helping people, like inspiring them and helping them find the right spot for their talent. So I'm excited for you for 2021, 2022, and how you talk about what you're going for and how you want to help people. So honored to have you on. And you know, you're a real smart gal. So why real estate? Tell us your story. Like, how did you end up in real estate?
Well, real estate has fascinated me my entire life. So when I was 20, I bought a house and I walked into a little dairy store and they had the little pamphlets on the thing with the pictures of the houses. And there was this ad and it said, you know, no money down, you can buy a house, blah, blah, blah. So I called the agent. He took me over to see it. He said, just buy it. And I said, okay. So I filled out the paperwork. And then about 2 days before settlement, he said, you need to bring $2,000 for closing costs. And I said, what are closing costs? And I was like, surprise. So it was no money down except for that little thing. And so I called my mom and I was like, what are closing costs? And she goes, she explained it to me. And I went to settlement and I closed. And then I got a big fat refund on April 15th because I owned a house. And I was like, oh my gosh, you get money for owning a house? I was like, this is really cool. And then I thought, you know what? I'm going to get my real estate license because the guy that had sold me the house didn't tell me anything I should have known. He didn't tell me to get a home. I know, no home inspection. Of course, that was 1979. So houses, the real estate industry was very different then. Our contract was one page, front and back. That's it.
Wow.
No lead paint forms, no asbestos forms, no radon, no home inspection, no agency disclosures, one page, front and back. So I went to a real estate school. I was working in DC at the time for the machinist unit as a secretary, and I was going to Maryland University at night. I thought, well, I'll just get my real estate license. This will be fun. So I got my license and then I kind of shifted gears because I wanted to be in journalism. But after I got a taste of real estate, I was like, I think I just want to do real estate. So I opened up my own brokerage in, I think 1985, I was like 27, had about 30 agents working with me. And then when I had kids, I decided I didn't want to manage agents. I just wanted to sell houses. So I went to work for some of the bigger companies and just evolved that way. So it's been a fun ride.
That sounds like a great ride and selling, you know, lots of houses and throughout that ride. What do you think has been the largest challenge for you as a realtor?
Largest challenge? Probably my husband passed away when my children were young. My youngest was 7. So I had three young kids at home. And then when my husband and I got married, he had 3 kids. Then we made 3 more kids. So I called them my 6-pack. So then he was gone. So I was doing this by myself. And so 3 were out of the house and 3 were in the house. And I guess, you know, raising children, putting food on the table, making sure that you remembered to pick this kid up and that kid up. And oh my God, I forgot the appraisal. And oh, there's a walkthrough and I forgot to go to settlement. And oh, Jeremy's sitting at the soccer field. I better go get him. You know, that kind of thing was probably the most challenging, was raising kids and running a business at the same time. So it was challenging.
Absolutely. It's admirable, like how you were able to do so with that many and that challenge. That's a big challenge. What's been most rewarding for you?
Probably the most rewarding is helping people learn how to do this business, because it's a wonderful business and anybody can do it. I've had agents work for me that have no personality. I've had agents that work for me that have wonderful personalities, but no organizational skills. So what I enjoy is figuring out what are they going to be good at and then helping them get to where they're going to go. I think that's probably been the best for me.
How does real estate at this point fit into your dreams and goals now?
Well, I sell my 100 houses a year. That's my goal. And then in my spare time, I like to help other people learn how to do real estate, because if you're selling 100 houses a year, you have overflow. You have buyers that you can't work with or that you don't have time for. So I share those with other people that are in the office, which is fun. And with my switch over to eXp, eXp allows me to help people on a bigger level. And because 2020 has been such a challenge and we do Zoom meetings, you can now talk to 12 people at a time. Yeah. So you can teach people all together how to do, like, I'm going to do a contract presentation tonight for one of my newer agents. She doesn't know how to write a contract. She's okay, but she's newer. So I'm going to do it on a Zoom call, and I'm going to send an email out to all the agents and say, hey, we're going to write a contract tonight together on a Zoom, like I'm doing with you. And this is my first year Zooming. It's like, I feel like a dinosaur. I've never done this before. So it's going to be different, because now I can teach 12 people how to do something. So it's just, it's going to be fun.
I think that's great. That's a tool and a great person's hands to use it. So I think that's fantastic. And you guys, and you can record it and then share it with more people.
Exactly.
Define success for you. Like, what's success for you, Karen?
Success is getting up every day and still loving what you do. When problems arise, which they do, we all have our life's challenges. Being able to get through it and have a good attitude and remain happy. I get up every morning. One of the girls that works for me, are we allowed to say girls anymore? One of the ladies that worked for me, she gave me a little poster and it says, it's a beautiful day. I've never seen this one before. So I have it stuck on my wall. Isn't that great?
That's great.
And so I appreciate every day. I get up and I thank God for my children and my car and my house and my Tempur-Pedic bed and the eggs in the refrigerator. And then I start my day. And I try not to let people get to me. If somebody's mean to me, which is, it happens, I just ignore it. And I figure they're having a bad day for some unknown reason. And I'm just going to roll with it and not let it bother me. So
that's a pretty successful way to run things. It sounds like your own miracle morning, which I'm a very big fan of. Tell us a little bit more about your family. So that's a passel of kids, and you know, what does that look like now? Do you have anybody working with you?
All grown up. They're all grown up. They're all out. So, I don't call them stepchildren because they're not stepchildren. They're bonus children because I didn't have to get any stretch marks to get them. Then I've got my three bio kids, and they all came from the same dad. So, and his name was Jerry. So I call them Jerry's kids, or my six pack. And I'm close to all of them. So I get calls on Mother's Day and Father's Day because I had two hats to wear because their bio mom passed away a long, long time ago. So, you know, it's busy staying in touch with everybody. And then I have my siblings that I'm close to. There were five of us. There were six, but we lost one along the way. So I'm interactive with my siblings on a regular basis. And I have a little bit of family-itis. So my son Jeremy works on the team. My daughter Maggie, my cousin Kathy, my sister Sherry. Did I say Kathy? Who did I leave out? If I left someone out, I'm a dead woman. Our daughter Maggie, son Jeremy. My niece Jess was working with me for years, but she just moved to Houston. Dang it. Maybe she'll come back. My nephew Brian worked for me for 13 years before he got his degree, and then he went to Boeing. And I'm like, oh, I love Brian. My son Michael does my stocks and accounting. My cousin Kathy does my Leisure World project. My sister Sherry does everything. We've been in business for like 35 years together. So I have family-itis. And then I have the agents that are like my extended family that are great. We walk together and hang out together and do things together. It's a nice group of people.
That's awesome. What are you currently learning right now, Karen? What's important to you? What are you studying?
I'm currently learning. I don't, like you mentioned, do you have a favorite book or movie? Not too much. I learned how to use Netflix. What I'm learning is how it feels to be by myself. COVID has, there's some lonely times because I, 2 years ago, I moved into my own house. I sold my old house to my daughter, and my youngest moved out. So it was just me. So you can't go out and play during COVID. And I'm 62. So some of my friends are over the age of 60. So it's hard to be by yourself. And there's some lonely moments where you have to figure out, you know, how are you going to get through this? Who am I going to eat dinner with tonight? And, you know, I'll call my son up and say, hey, can you go grab some food over at Maggie's house? I don't feel like eating alone tonight. And I'll call my son Dan in Texas, and I'll have my dinner out on the counter. I'll say, Danny, have dinner with me. He's like, okay. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So you get through it. And I walk with two of my friends in the morning. So they're both real estate agents with the company. And Deborah and Delilah and I walk every morning, and we're so different. Delilah moved here from Ecuador. So she became a US citizen a few years ago. And Deborah is a Democrat. She's an African-American woman. And I'm a white girl that lives in a bubble, according to Deborah. And I won't tell you what party affiliation I am, but we walk and we joke and we laugh, and it's fun. So you have to change. So I can't go out, and Deborah and I were going to take dance lessons because we're both single, and we thought, oh, it'll be great. We can, you know, go meet a guy and take some dance lessons and go to Glen Echo on Friday nights. And then COVID hit. And I was like, so anyway, so we walk. You just learn to adapt to different things. You learn to Zoom call. I learned how to do it, you know, and my daughter had to come over and set it up for me today because I couldn't figure out how to turn it on. And I was 6 minutes late for that. So you learn how to be flexible and, you know, kind of roll with things because that's what you have to do.
Absolutely. You adapt and you just keep going. And I feel like you've done that throughout your career. When we did our interview, you had me in stitches on a regular basis too. So like, what do you feel sets you apart, makes you different?
Your daughter's 7, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie? I think it's Finding Nemo or Nemo.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The little fish, guy. Okay. So there's this fish on there and her name's Dory. And she's always going, just keep swimming, just keep swimming.
Oh, yes, she does.
Yes. And so I just keep going. You know, I've been knocked off my skateboard a few times in my life. And you get back up and you figure there's a reason. And, you know, we're here for, you know, maybe 100 years and then we're not. And so you have to make the best of things while you're here. And I believe you're supposed to learn things and grow from them and help people. And I don't know, everybody's got their calling. I would say some people maybe shouldn't help people. They should just stay over in their corner doing whatever it is they're good at, because everybody has a talent. Everybody has a talent. And if we could just figure out what those are and then, you know, put everybody in the right vehicle or place or job or whatever, it would be a better place.
Absolutely. I believe very much in the miracle morning and raising the consciousness of humanity. And if everyone is using their talents, that will raise humanity anyway. So I feel like that's the highest hope we can have. What do you feel has been like the biggest reason or reasons for your success? I feel like that led pretty well into that.
That's probably the influence of my father. He didn't share like a lot of stories with me, but his family came over here around 1920 and they were from Canada. So they didn't speak great English. They spoke French. And my dad was not a big man. He was maybe 5'5", maybe 120, didn't speak English, had dark skin, had small bones like me. Was picked on. His mother was a hard worker, but very hard on her kids. They lost their house during the Depression. He moved to Washington after the war and met my mom. And, you know, I watched what he did throughout his life. And he was a brilliant guy. I mean, he went to Catholic University, got his degree in engineering. He has 10 patents for designing things. And so he's a brilliant guy. So I guess from him, I was always like, be your best, do your best. You might not have this skill, but you might have that skill. Work hard, play hard. And he used to say, pay now, play later. That was his motto. So I did. I paid a lot of dues. And someday I'll get to play, like maybe next year. Anyway, good, strong work ethic from that guy. No, he lived to be 94.
Woo! Hey, yeah, that's a win.
94. It's good.
90 and 94. Hey, that says good things for you and your kids right there. That says good things for you. I feel like those are great lessons. You learned a lot of great lessons from your dad. What do you think has been your largest or your biggest failure? And what did you learn from it?
Biggest failure. So I spent, I guess, 20 or 30 years buying houses. And like every year I would buy another house. It was like playing Monopoly. And and then in 2005, I got involved in a commercial real estate project, and I should have stayed in residential. Stay with what you know. So I got into a commercial real estate project, and I did not do what I would call my due diligence. I should have had an accountant, an attorney, and an advisor giving me more input. And so we were putting together four parcels of real estate where we were going to build like mixed use town center properties. Mm-hmm. And so I put probably $1 million of my own money into it, but I also put money of other people's into it. And it was going to be a brilliant project. But one of the partners in the project, who never should have been a partner, they were on one of the deeds and they held the entire project up. So they refused to close. They wanted to have a larger profit. And because of the way it was configured legally, I couldn't do anything about it. So we had to go to court. The problem was that we went to court, and even though we won, the outcome was a win in some people's mind. That was the year that the real estate market started to turn and go the other way. So it was like 2005, 2006, 2007. So I wasn't aware that commercial lenders could just take your property from you, even if you were making your payments. So I learned that the hard way. They called me up and they said, hey, Karen, we're going to call your loan. I said, what are you going to call it? And
they said, oh, God.
And they said, we're going to call it due. And I said, you can't do that. And they said, well, we can and we are. So in commercial real estate, if the property's value drops, the banks can call the loans. And they did. So they basically took my entire Monopoly board away from me. And I was like, well, that's not a good day. So, but we'll rebuild. So it was a rough, very rough 5 years. And this was a few years after my husband had passed away. So it was just sort of like one thing after another. And I was like, well, you know, Henry Ford had problems and almost lost Ford. And President Lincoln had a heck of a time. And, other people have had problems throughout history, but I don't think Colonel Sanders started his chicken thing, Kentucky Fried Chicken, until he was 72. So I was like, well, I'm face planning at 52. That's okay. Won't last forever. And it didn't. And my kids were fine. I wasn't sick. So many more people on the planet, close friends of mine, have been through much harder times. Mine was just Monopoly. Close it, put it on the shelf, come back and play it again. But all the kids were healthy, so it was fine. And then I just learned how to sell more houses, because through any kind of bad thing that happens to you, you can either, you know, turn lemons into lemonade, or you can just cry about it. I had to do better marketing to make those payments on the project for 2 years while we were in court, because we couldn't build, we couldn't do anything. The developer walked away. I was like, so I was making these huge payments. So in order to make the huge payments, I had to become better at real estate. And that's when my sales probably went from 50 a year, which was good. I doubled it. So, and then I could teach other people how to double it.
You know, it's interesting, the failing forward and all the lessons and the things that we learn as we're doing it. And your resilience like shines through. I love what you said. And Colonel Sanders is one of my favorite, you know, 1,000 times told no, living on a couch, like just, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing story too. Well, what is one thing that you've done that you feel other real producers absolutely should do?
Probably help other people. I think everybody that has come to me that has wanted to learn how to sell real estate, because people just call me and say, hey, can I, you know, what are you doing?
Can I ask you a question? Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, sure. I have agents call me from other brokerages and say, hey, Karen, I can't find my broker. Can I put this clause in the contract, blah, blah, blah. Because I just like people and I like helping people. If you help one person do better, it just makes the world a better place, right?
It does. And I believe in karma too. You have a lot of good things coming. What is the greatest lesson you feel you've ever learned?
Probably just get back up. You know, get back on the horse. Thomas Edison, I think he did 2,000 experiments on his light bulb before he made his light bulb. I hope I don't have to sell or fail 2,000 times just to, but now I think I'm at probably the best place I've been in my whole career. I miss my kids being little, I have to say. And this year's been hard. It's been so hard. I drive past the soccer field at the high school and I cry. And it's not the soccer field, it's the football field. But they also played soccer on the football field. And that's where my daughter cheered. And all my kids went there. And now they're all grown up. But what breaks my heart is all the juniors and seniors this year, they can't go to their dances and they can't play their games. And I cry. So this has been a really hard year. It's like roller coaster emotions.
Yeah. Well, and you care about people. So that makes sense to me. What do you want to be remembered for, Karen? Like what is it you want to be remembered for?
Probably being kind to people and being compassionate. I have one guy that I've been helping for, 8 years. And he would have been a homeless guy on the corner with a cup if I hadn't helped him. And he tells me that. He called me a couple days ago. And I found him housing, and he wasn't eligible for anything because he was 57 and he wasn't, there were no programs. So this was like 8 years ago. So I put him in my vacant foreclosed homes and I was like, here, go hang out here. We'll get the utilities turned on and you need Social Security and you should be covered by disability and there's things you should do. Who's your family? Da, da, da. No family would help him. So I don't know what he did in his past life, but that wasn't my place to judge. So I got him a place up in West Virginia and he stayed there for a little while and then that didn't work out. And then we finally got him a place in an apartment complex in Martinsburg, West Virginia. And for $280 a month, he gets food. He gets 5 meals a week. He has a one bedroom apartment and he's surviving. He's not on the corner with a cup. And I believe that if there were more people that would step outside of their fancy cars and fancy houses and actually not just drop $10 in the church bucket, but actually help another human, that it would be a better world. So that's what I'd like to be remembered for. Not, you know, backing my car into the tree and, you know, knocking my rear view mirror off my car and I'm driving over to my son's house, holding on to the rear view mirror going, I did it again.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Hey, I may have a couple of those kind of stories myself. I love what you just said. Well, I was going to ask about a fun or hilarious story. I feel like you just made us all laugh, but like, do you have any other fun, hilarious stories you want to tell? And
so my son, Jeremy, and I were renovating a house here in Maryland, and the owners of the house were in New Jersey. So they can't help. So we fixed the house up. It was the hardest fix up of my life. It was so hard because I looked at it at night. I didn't really look at it well. So when you went out into the backyard, there were dozens of giant trees. It looked like the redwood forest, for God's sakes. So we had to take those trees down. So that killed the budget. And then we found out that we had to take the heating system out and put in electric heat. And then we found out that the basement had problems. Then we found out it had termites, it had radon. We had to tear out the kitchen. I mean, it was just one thing after another. Anyway, we finished the house. It took much longer than we thought it was going to take. We had to tear out all those trees and all that vegetation, all that growth in the back. And it was the night before the open house. So it was a Friday night. We were having it open on Saturday. I'd mailed out 2,000 postcards that it was open on Saturday and Sunday. And I called Jeremy, my son, and I said, Jeremy, come on over. I'm finishing the vacuuming. I need you to throw a few things in the truck and we're done. And so he drives over and I hear this like loud raining noise. It was raining, but I've never heard it that loud. I opened the garage door and I opened the back and I looked in and the gutters were not connected and the rain was coming down and making this pelting noise. And I noticed that the yard was filling up with water. And I was like, oh my God. So I called my friend Lou and he's a roofer. And I said, Lou, I don't know what to do. He said, well, I don't know if I can help you today, Karen, because my wife just had surgery on her mouth and we're just going to go home. And I said, is she in the car with you? And he said, yeah. And I said, I will just leave her in the car with you. Just bring her to the house and you get out of the house and tell me what to do with this. And at this point, I'm crying. I'm covered in mud. I'm crying. And the yard is literally filling up inch by inch by inch. And I guess when we took down all the trees, the grading wasn't done and the gutters weren't this. And so Lou goes, okay. He goes, well, just in the meantime, he says, the gutters are probably clogged and that's what's causing it. He says, tell Jeremy to get on the roof and put a hose down the gutters and it'll make it go away. And I said, Lou, it's a thunder and lightning storm. And he goes, that's okay. He'll be fine. So I said, fine. So Jeremy gets on top of the roof and he starts cleaning the gutters and the water's still rising. And I'm covered in mud and I've got straw all over me and I'm a mess. And so Lou said, we're going to go. He said, go to the store and get this pump thing. And I said, no, Lou, I'm not doing it. I can't. I'm a mess. You go do it. So he goes and he says, all right, I'll do it. So he goes and he gets the pump and we start pumping out the yard and Jeremy and I are crawling underneath the deck like two sea urchins and we're digging out the mud from under the deck because the water was an inch away from the window where it would have gone into the nicely newly finished basement. So we trenched the yard. We pulled the water away from the deck. We're crawling around. And then I had to go back that night at like 11 o'clock at night to make sure the pump was still pumping and the water was still moving away from the house. And then the next morning we went over and we got straw. I put all the straw in the back of my car, which you should never do because
straw it's hard to get out.
So we it's now like 90 degrees. We're putting straw all over the yard. We pulled it off. We stopped the flooding. We retrenched it so that the water was going where it was supposed to go. We put the gutter extenders on. It's now noon. It's 95 degrees. I'm sweating. I'm covered in sweat and mud. I was under the deck washing the windows because I was the only one that could fit under the deck. It was about 18 inches and I had to squat down and crawl under it. And we finished it. And then I called my cousin Kathy and said, Kathy, run over to this house and start the open. I need to go home and take a shower because now it's 45 minutes away from open house time. So I went home. I took my shower. I came back. I was ready. I was like, hi. Come on in. House.
Nothing happened.
It was awful. And we sold it. We got multiple offers. It sold. Everything was wonderful.
Oh my God.
Is that a story?
That's you. Well, I laughed several times and you know, that's another story of resilience. Like, well, whatever has to be done when you're the entrepreneur and you're the kicking realtor, you figure it out. Yeah.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's an honor to have you on, Karen. And, you know, everybody heard it here at Real Producers. And, you know, thank you very much for being our cover and being part of Real Producers, Karen.
Well, I love the Real Producers thing. I don't know if I told you this, but one of the things that drew me to you was when I started reading about what this Real Producers thing is that you promote other businesses and you all work together. And I built my business kind of doing that. And so when I saw that, I was like, I need to find out more about this. Because it's like I scratch your back, you scratch my back. Everybody's working together. I'm so sad that of this COVID thing, because I can't go to any of these things, the events, but I promise when this COVID stuff's gone, I'll come to the events because they look like fun. My daughter had a baby in May, and so I want to see the kids. And so I'm really careful about going out. But I love the collaboration, the working with all the different people and reading the articles, and it's been fun. So thank you for including me in the family.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate the heck out of you. Thank you, Karen.
Thanks for listening to the Real Estate Success and Support Podcast. To get even more information to take your real estate business to the next level, visit kristenbrindley.com. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and tune in next week. And until then, please leave us a review on iTunes.